Radio Pulpit, 657 AM, your daily companion.
This is Heart to Heart with Sibongile Mofokeng on Radio Pulpit. Heart to
Heart. The sounds of Colin Maluleke coming out from a news bulletin at 12, and the song is a song of the breakthrough. 14 minutes. It is just after 12 on 657 AM. Radio Pulpit, your daily companion. Now, in the previous weeks, we've had Masiviwe, a movement for mental health, and the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, funded through the Foundation of Professional Development, FPD. And this week, we are talking about substance use, which substance use is using alcohol, illegal drugs, or misusing medicines in a harmful way. Today, we are exploring the impact that substance use has on the mental health of the family members of the user, even on the user themselves. And I'm so excited that this afternoon, I'm talking to Tebogo Ramadiro from the South African Depression and Anxiety Group. Sir, how are you?
Good day, you.
I am blessed of the Lord. Welcome to the Radio Pulpit family. So I got to make something clear. We don't have listeners at Radio Pulpit. We have family. So welcome to the family.
Thank you so much for having me, and good afternoon to the family.
Yeah, I love it. Tebogo, I love it. Ay man, urutega ka speedy. Urutega ka speedy. Utloso. So we're talking substance use and mental health today, but there are so many of us who are using and abusing substance, but we are not accepting it. Even when others are trying to show us, we don't see it. We think that we can control this. We think that we are in control, but at the end of the day, it ends up affecting our family members. Now, when we're talking substance abuse and mental health, why would we bring the two in the same sentence?
Okay. Thank you for that question, Spungile. So the reason why we bring substance abuse and mental health into the same equation is because of neither of them happen in isolation. So what I mean by that is when someone's mental health is affected, they often isolate themselves, or they sleep too much or sleep too little. So others even use substances, which is an indication that their mental health is not in a good space. So you often find when someone has lost a loved one, they now start drinking beyond the limit that they used to drink. So that would also be the indication, you know, like to say that their mental health is not in a good space.
But do they see themselves, Tebogo?
The majority of the people that use the substances do not recognize, because remember that they are in denial. So we usually see that there's three reasons why people use or abuse substances.
Yeah.
To for fun, to forget, or to function. So we really need to understand, are they using it for fun, or what is it that they're trying to forget, and what is it that they're using it to function? So let's say maybe you're working in a high-pressure environment where you have to deliver results, like an advertising agency, for example. So they would be using to function so that they can get to, you know, come up with great ideas, or, you know, come up with brilliant concepts and are changing. So people need to understand out there, or the community, the family, need to understand that there's three reasons why people use substances.
Okay, so if it's for fun, forgetting, and functioning,
to function,
there are those ones who hide themselves. Where do they fall under? Forgetting, functioning, because that's so not would, fun.
Yeah, so you would you, people who hide themselves would usually fall under the bracket of functioning.
Okay.
So we say that's where you look out for signs of they don't miss events like your parties, your weddings, you know, they are always there. Whenever there's a function, the person will be there. So this is also a form of hiding the use of, let's say, making an example of alcohol as a substance.
So it's a way of trying to cope. It's a coping mechanism.
That is correct. That is correct, Bugele.
Sure. Now, because people aren't aware of themselves when they are using it as a coping mechanism, for example, or for fun. No, I think with the coping mechanism, they might, but you will correct me. If they're trying to use it to forget or trying to function and cope, then they are aware of their space. They are aware that they're using this. But in terms of one who is now having fun with substance, who's trying to have fun, when it comes to that, is there a difference? Let me ask, is there a difference? Because one would say, no, I'm just trying to cope. And it means they are aware of what's happening. But the one who's doing it for fun, are they aware that they're abusing substance?
So what is important, that's a good question that you're asking. So what is important to remember is that everyone, without me being like holistic, it says when we start off using substances, they're using it to experiment or for fun. Usually we say, you know what, this tastes a bit nicer, you know, and I'm just wanting to try it out. So that's okay. Where the fun element comes into effect when they're trying to experiment. Okay. But now once they start developing a high tolerance towards that particular system, they move on to something else greater. So meaning that, let's say you're starting to use DACA, so you're no longer getting the same effect that you are getting from the DACA. Now you move on to your CAD or your crystal meth. So you see that now it's moving. You're developing a high tolerance towards that particular substance. Even with alcohol, you started drinking off maybe weekends. Now it's moving to during the week. Now during the week, it's less. Rhythm of saying, hey, you know what, I had a hard day, but let me have two drinks. Now two drinks now are no longer giving you that effect. You start developing high tolerance. Now you're drinking eight to get the same effect that you were getting when you were drinking two drinks. So that's when it starts off with something that is like, okay, this drug like cocaine, it's giving me that, you know, buzzing feeling. So for me to keep on having it, now you start now having it frequently. But you remember when you're starting off, it's something that you're doing just for fun, as an experiment.
So mentally, what's happening to this person? Denial?
So what has happened to the individual is that we would say they are in denial. But remember, like I highlighted and indicated that when someone is starting now, you are seeing that they are no longer using it in, we would say, the normal way of using the substances. That's when you are picking up that their mental health is not in a good space. So they will be in denial that this substance is affecting them. But once you start having those conversations, you say, look, I realize as a friend that, you know, you usually would drink only on weekends, but now every day, there's something happening. And these days you are also asking for money, so which means it's affecting you financially. So that's where you see that the individual might be in denial because they start now asking for taking out loans, which now would frustrate them. Also, in terms of their mental health, they start missing work. Now they have to go see a GP, a doctor, you know. So that's where you start to realize the effects of the substances that are affecting their mental health.
Sure. When you're talking about this, Tebogo, it makes me wonder when it comes to addiction to clothes, buying clothes. When somebody is now addicted to buying clothes, I know it's not substance, but there are people who get pleasure in buying clothes. There are people who get pleasure in buying new things. There are people who find pleasure in looking at pornography. And you find that, as you mentioned earlier on, they start with something small and then bigger and then and with gambling as well. So do we classify all of these in the same bracket, the addiction thereof or the abuse thereof? Is it the same?
So this is not my area of expertise, but what happens when someone is addicted to, like you mentioned, like shopping, there's that addiction factor. So what happens I'll make an example, what happens in the brain is what we call the dopamine system when it's been rewarded. So this is your pleasure.
Okay. Yes.
So I'll ask you, what is your favorite meal? You would say maybe, what is your favorite meal if you don't mind me asking?
Say that again, Tebogo.
What is your favorite meal?
Oh, I don't have.
Okay, then I have favorite meal.
I don't have. Maybe beetroot. I would say beetroot and red meat.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, what happens when you eat beetroot?
There's that pleasure. There's that joy. There's that satisfaction.
You start smiling.
Yes, you're very happy talking to everyone.
So that's what happens in your brain activity, your dopamine system. It gets activated because you're doing something that you love. So now, what happens if you don't have money for reading?
Yeah.
You'll be fine. Life will carry on. You won't stop.
Yeah.
But if someone is now addicted to a particular substance, let's say, for example, addicted to shopping, they start now getting into what? Credit. Applying for credit and now, so that they can get that. So anytime they buy a new item, it brings that satisfaction to them. But now they no longer find themselves in a space where they can say, no, this is enough. This is a stopping point. Mm. So if someone who's also using substances, like I said earlier on, that they start developing a high tolerance towards a particular substance. So let's say they don't get
the fix.
The fix. Because now the brain is used to a certain routine now. To say, no, you always give me this quantity at this time. So let's make it with example to alcohol. So now we're no longer getting alcohol around this time. They start getting agitated, having withdrawal symptoms. So what happens is that they're going to find out ways of getting the money to buy the alcohol, even if it's now lying to a friend or borrowing money somewhere, you know. So now there's that behavior that happens around so that they can get that fix for the day. So that would be that addiction that is taking place towards a particular substance. So I wouldn't necessarily say that I don't classify them in the same bracket, but I just wanted to highlight or explain what happens when someone is addicted. Either maybe shopping or pornography, for example. They start developing, they start going online. In terms of pornography, they start now having to get data because that requires data to watch it.
Until they don't have money in the bank.
Yes. And sometimes now they no longer start concentrating in at work. They don't see that they're at work. They need to get that fix of that particular substance.
So now what happens into the ones who are receiving mentally, who are receiving this kind of behavior where a person would now be borrowing money, even going to an extent sometimes of stealing money, and also coming home drunk or stoned. I'm going to use the street word stoned from either dacha or from either crystal meth or whatever. What happens mentally to the lives or mentally to those around them, those who support them, family members, for example, and friends?
Thank you for that question. So the use or abuse of substances, because we now term it substance use disorder, it's us understanding that addiction is a disease. So it's not something, it's like when that happens, when a particular loved one is now abusing the substances and they are in denial, doesn't only affect them as individuals, but it affects the entire family. How does it do that? It's in simple things that now people have to change their routines within the house. Now they start to have to hide things. You know, there's that stigma now to say, hey, you know what? He gets money. Even if he's looking for money, maybe to buy bread, he no longer trusts you. There's that trust that has been broken. You're like, they're going to take that money instead of buying bread. Going to buy so now that trust relationship between the individual and the family gets broken. So they start hiding things around the house. They start hiding money. If they used to leave money lying around, it no longer happens. So it affects the family, them even not realizing that it changes their behavior. Because now what happens is that we start talking, once we start referring to the work, for example, we say, the work. When we come at family gatherings, there is that stigma or that labeling. Because the drunk card, people make sure that you give them one. So even now, they no longer see the individual or Tebogo as a human being, but it's now somebody who's been labeled, and that's where the stigma happens. So in terms of their mental health, family members start getting frustrated or agitated, shouting at that individual, having a negative outlook of the person that's using the substances, which is now the family does no longer realize. So every time they they start going, so they start hiding. The conversations are happening in secret. So it has a huge impact on the family's mental health as well.
Mm. How can we then help ourselves first, those of us who are in the receiving end? Because at the end of the day, you find families are struggling to deal with this because maybe Sibongile becomes violent or cursing, or they even sleep on their vomit as a result of all of this abusing of substance. And sometimes it's children who are on the receiving end. So how do we heal first before we can help the other? Or is it the other way around? We heal, get them to healed, we deal with them first, and then we come to ourselves. How does it work?
Okay. So what we've realized is that is rehabilitation. When someone, let's say a loved one, you recommend for them to go to rehab. When they go to rehab, we are going to rehabilitate the mind. But there's still going to be, some behavior that needs to change within the family. So what we pick up is that loved ones are too quick to say, you know, this person needs help, but not realizing that it also has had a mental health impact on them.
Individual. So I think it's exactly what are you saying? I think it's almost like what we've been hearing over the years, where they would say, if I'm a drunkard in the house, you're all drunkards. If I'm abusing substance, so it means that you all, because mentally you're affected by what I do.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So it's a matter of saying that what is the contribution towards the individual? Because they don't just wake up becoming an addict.
Okay.
There's certain behaviors that might be happening around the household, even if maybe it's not happening around the household, it's happening in the community. So when we go seek for help for the individual that's using substances, also encourage that the family needs to also look for help. I'll make an example.
Mm.
We send a loved one to rehabilitation, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to rehabilitate or change their behavior. Then they come back. But when they come back, as a family, we continue with our parties. We continue with the normal lifestyle.
Yeah.
Even we are all drinking in the household. But because of this, the individual is more addicted, gets more addicted to the substance. They are unlike you and me, you know, where we can stop, fair enough. But when the person comes back to rehab, to home after being from rehab, we continue with our behavior. But now we are no longer realizing that we are not helping, supporting our family member. Instead, we are now leading them to more to relapse as well. You know, so the behavior needs to change within the household. Like, well, I'll make an example. You give somebody who just comes, who's struggling with alcohol, you give them water on a glass of wine. What does that do? It means that you're triggering the individual. You know?
So it's you never think of that, Devo.
You know, it's those things that are unconscious. Because how can you give someone just from being because of alcohol, but you're giving them water in a glass of wine?
Yeah.
So it's certain behaviors that need to change within the household as well. It's not just only that individual that you're taking to rehab, but also as a family, we also need to get the ability to go for therapy, you know, and prepare ourselves for the individual that's going to come back, because now they're coming back to the same environment. But certain behaviors need to change, because we cannot continue with all that we were doing, but we are seeing that the person needs help. You know? So it's to answer your question is that these things don't happen in isolation. They have to be co-joined to say that as a family, we also have been affected. Now we start, because the person comes back from the rehab, we still continue hiding things. What are we saying to that individual? We're saying that we no longer trust. We no longer trust them, but the trust was broken. But it's going to take a while for you to repair. But we also need to correct our behaviors within the household.
All right. So, but in terms of talking to the person, what do we do? Because we are not quite sure sometimes if we are doing it right, or if we are enabling them, or if we... So how do we talk around them, especially when the resentment feelings come because of what my father is doing, what my mother is doing, what my brother, my sister, my child is doing? It's a disgrace to the whole family that the neighbors are watching us, and sometimes things go disappearing in the house. So what kind of words should we be using when we are starting the journey of healing in the family? Say, for example, with the very same example that you have done, the person is coming back from rehab. What should we, how should we be behaving around them, and what should we be saying for our peace, for our mental health to be stable as well? Because when they are not stable, it means we were not stable as well.
And that is, you know, I would say that is a million-dollar question, to say, what should we do, you know? And what we realize is that sometimes as family members, we want to do this thing alone. Because there's that stigma to say, hey, you know, one of our family members is a drunkard or somebody who abuses is a druggie. But when you need to change the terms, because when we speak about another human being, you can't just call them Nyaupi. They've got a name. I don't believe in their ID document it's written Nyaupi.
No.
The name that we are using. Because it's that respect to say, Thabo, I see that you're struggling with, you know, drugs. What is happening? Instead of saying, hey, you are an addict, you're a drug addict. Already you are labeling the individual. So what families can do is to say that they realize that this thing is frustrating them, you know.
Yeah.
And at the same time, to say that they cannot to come to the realization that they cannot do it alone. You know, there are organizations that can offer support and guidelines, because this is something that might be new or foreign to the family. So they don't have to necessarily have to deal with it alone, but seek for help out to organizations that exist, you know, to say that how can we as a family get support? And the way is being kind to the individual, you know, addressing them as a human being. I always say that address them as a human being before we label them.
Okay.
They have got a name. That a lot of people who are struggling with substances, they often don't want to seek for help because of the labeling and the stigma that surrounds being, you know, labeled as an alcoholic or a drug addict.
Okay.
But when you're speaking to them in a manner, I see that you are struggling, you know, with alcohol, or you're struggling with cannabis, or you're struggling with cocaine. Is there something that needs to happen for us really to be in a situation that we can help? How can we support you, you know, filling up their space and letting them coming from a point of non-judgment, because that's what a lot of people struggle with. We are quick to point a finger, you know, to say, look, you are doing this, but the other thing we need to realize to say, what are we contributing? What have we contributed for that individual to be like this? That's why I say that these things don't happen in isolation. There's a community, you know.
Yeah.
People
yeah.
can go to seek for guidance, you know. And in the space of, you know, being the appropriate family, there are still these spaces where one can go and seek for, you know, advice. But right. there also are organizations that exist that you can for help from.
A family member says, Sibongile, can I remain anonymous? I was talking to my son about his father, and he was asking, how can we help his father? Because it's embarrassing. He is in matric and is affecting his grades. His father doesn't even look like the profession that he's in. What can we do?
Yeah. So anonymous, what they can do is reach out to organizations like ourselves at SADC, where we do have, you know, a helpline that we can provide the necessary referrals for them to, you know, connect with the right people to help them. Because as you are writing you see the young child now, which is matric, their mental health is being affected. And it's been affected in the sense of now they can't even study.
All right. So when we come back, I think we can even give the numbers of the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, where family can call and be assisted. Because if one cannot study, it means mentally they're not sound as well. It really affects them in a bad way. So let's take a break, Tebogo, and come back to talk to you some more.
You're at 657 AM, Radio Caring. 24 hours a day.
In today's rush world, there is limited time for yourself. Your cell phone, however, is with you all the time. So why not use it? Visit our Radio Pulpit website with your cell phone and restore your soul. There you can find out more about Radio Pulpit, download the Bible to your cell phone, read Word for Today, and you can listen to us online.
just visit www.radiopulpit.co.za, especially developed for your cell phone. Radio Pulpit, your daily companion.
Do you need prayer? WhatsApp your name and your prayer request to 082-657-2729 and our care center will gladly contact you to pray for you.
Give your faith wings. Explore life with 657 AM.
This is Heart to Heart with Sibongile Mofokeng on Radio Pulpit. Heart to Heart.
That was Bishop Louis Remnant, Ewe Chiesu, and it was a request there from Thulani Ndlovu in Bulawayo. Hey, you're always there. Thank you so much. We love you back. Thulani says, hi, Sibongile, blessed day to Christians listening worldwide. May this be a day to remember. Greetings to all musicians and preachers listening. And then he requested and he says, God of the revival. He's the God of revival. From Thulani Ndlovu in Bulawayo in Zimbabwe. My family, I'm not alone. I'm talking to Tebogo Ramadiro all the way from the South African Depression and Anxiety Group. We're talking substance abuse and mental health. And yeah, my family, you can ask your questions. We still have a little bit of time where you can just send in your questions to 012-334-1322. Actually, you can call in there. That's the line that you can call, 012-334-1322. And you can send your messages to our WhatsApp line, which is 082-657-2729, 082-657-2729. Our SMS line, which will cost you just 3 rands, 1 rand 50 actually. It's 37871, 37871, 37871. When do we say it is now? When do we take it serious when it comes to a person who is abusing substance in our families? When do we take it serious that now we can trust them? Do we wait until we are okay inside? Because it's very hard to trust someone who's abusing substance. And I'm going back to the example. And they go to rehab and then they come back. And then you mentioned that we also make a mistake where we would even give the person on a glass that is a wine glass, and maybe that can trigger. But when do we start trusting? When do we take it serious that now this person, we can now start trusting them? Is it when we ourselves are okay? Because what I found is that emotionally we become very restless when the person is around you. I, for one, had experienced it in my home, and I'm so delighted that the person who was abusing substance has been healed. I don't know if healed is the right word, but he doesn't abuse substance anymore. Yeah, and as you said, fun, function, and forget. And I think he was dealing with the forgetting and functioning part, and he abused different kinds. He played around at the beginning when he started. He was in high school, one of the best students, an A student. And he started having fun with dacha and then crystal meth. And then I think I forgot what they call it. One of the expensive ones. I forgot what they called it. And it grew and it grew. And now later on, I remember how it was hard to have him in the house, even when he's not abusing. You're like, yo, where are my bags? Mentally, you're not sound when they're around. So when do we become fine? When do we take it that we can? Is it when we ourselves, we are mentally healthy, we are resting mentally, we don't think, yo, phone ka nzimola, it can disappear?
Yeah. That is an interesting point to raise. So when you say it in that manner, when does it become all right? Like, I think like any journey of recovery or any journey when one has broken trust, I would paint it in a sense of, let's say, in a relationship setup, you know,
okay,
to say that the partner, you know, led astray. For the other partner to trust, it's going to take time. That is the all honest truth, you know. It's not something that we can even put a time frame on saying that, you know, after they come back from rehab, in the next 2 weeks, we are going to be okay. So their behaviors are also going to show what the direction of the individual, whether, because remember, even if they come out of rehab, there's still a journey of recovery. That's why you see someone saying that I'm a recovering addict for 12 years.
Is it the right word of using it, though? I've heard that in these rehabs and stuff, they tell them to use that, I'm a recovering. Yeah. But mentally, does it say I'm recovering? Or mentally, is it much better to say I have recovered and no longer put yourself in the same sentence with recovering? I'm just asking for curiosity sake now, because I'm wondering if I keep on saying I'm recovering, so it gives me the chance of, no, I can go back.
yeah. So it's tricky, because of when one says, look, I'm recovering, it means that you're still on that journey.
Okay.
Because there's still that, you can be not be drinking or recovering addict for like 25 years.
Yeah.
And there will be that one moment. Maybe there was something that triggered you at work, you know, or in your personal life. You see, you know what happened. Is that now you start imagining that smell of that, you know, bottle of wine or whatever substance that you're using.
Yeah.
That's why they are always on recovery. To say that there is that likelihood that you might even relapse after 25 years. Does that mean that you failed altogether? Not necessarily the case.
It's dealing with my mental health. Yeah, so that I'm not too strict on myself. Because, okay.
That I'm recovered.
Okay.
I'm recovered, but they say you're recovered, but after 3 years, you start going back or you relapse.
All right.
So you see now, it's like decreasing that stigma. So that's how you constantly on recovery.
Okay.
On the journey of recovery. It's like cancer. When they say
it relapses. Yes. Okay.
It can pop up. Yes. That's why it's always the term of recovery.
Okay. A family member says, Pongile, please ask Teboho, is it possible to help somebody who's abusing substance for real?
No, it is possible. Funny enough is that with rehab or with someone who is using substances, it all boils down to the individual. You can provide all the tools, you know, but when they are not ready, and I've had to sit with someone who's in recovery, they said something interesting to me to say, you know what, when I was using or smoking crystal meth every day, I started losing money, you know, I started losing my business. But there was a day, there was this inner voice that spoke to me to say, this thing is not worth it, you know. And today, I took a decision. My family came to me, they were willing to pay, but because of I was not ready, I didn't have a conversation with myself.
So mentally, this person is not ready, and so they shouldn't be forced into it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. That's why rehab is voluntary. You can never force someone to go into rehab.
Some of our black families, Teboho, believe in also using corporal punishment to somebody who's doing that in the family. What does it do mentally to that person?
So it's like, you know, when you're now corporally punishing the individual, it's like you're changing a certain behavior in them. So once, it's like when you corporally punish a person every day, they get used to the punishment. So they develop a certain, so it's okay. I mean, I know this is what's the end result. Because how many people, in all honesty, how many people in our communities where we find community members hitting them, and they will feel that pain or go to hospital for those weeks. When they come back, they start doing it again. So it's saying that now to them that whatever, because remember that they need that fix. Remember that pleasure seeking system. So they don't know how to stop. But it's with guidance, and in all honesty, it's with support. And remember now, like we highlighted earlier on, the names that we use, the stigma, that person will resist to get help because of they've already been labeled something. But if you speak to them, people, you know what, this thing is affecting you.
Okay.
Financially, this is what you're spending. This is how it's affecting. We can see that you're in a good space, but we are here for you when you are ready. When you are ready. Because it only takes that small incident for someone who's addicted to substances to say they want to stop. Either they see somebody who they are smoking with, maybe foam in front of them, or either they see someone being arrested. It only takes that one incident. It's like that voice in them that says, you know what, the reality is that if I don't stop, I'm going to end up like that individual. But if we tell them to say, look, you need to stop now, it's like you're instructing them. Versus when you are saying to them, look, I see that you're struggling with this and it's affecting you on a daily basis. And it's not an easy conversation to have. It sounds easier said than done. One might say, but we've been saying to them, but we get frustrated. That's why I always go back to say that families don't have to do this thing alone.
All right. So tough love is not the way to go. Yeah. Tough love is not the way to go. Not always.
Not always is not always there. Because once you instill tough love, you're developing a resistance. Because the person will still continue to say, even if you chase them out on the streets. But now remember that once you chase them out on the streets, they are more vulnerable to being stabbed, to a lot of things. Even if you tell yourself to say, you know what, I'm ready to bury them. But we are talking about a loved one. You know, that's pain for me, put it there, a rubbish pain to put an individual there. But it's about saying that I cannot do this thing at all. I've tried it my way, but my methods are not working. So where do I go and seek for help?
All right. Another family member says, Bongile, please ask Debogo, is it okay to involve social workers?
So it's always key to involve social workers. Remember, social workers, let's say in the setup of a government setup rehab, the social workers are the ones that facilitate the process for one to go into rehabilitation.
Oh, so it is vital.
Yes, it is vital because remember, I highlighted earlier on to say no one wakes up being an addict. No one wakes up today and say, I mean, there's something that has happened in the past or that is happening. And like I alluded to the fact that there's three reasons why people use substances: to perform, to function, or to forget.
So isn't it easier? It should be easy to leave it because we are doing it for fun. Okay, no, but it's not true. You never know that you'll be addicted. You never know. Yeah.
So once we understand to say, okay, this person, we've just buried a loved one, a family member, they were close to, and Sipo was never like this, but now they're drinking. So now we're getting the issue to say that grieving, it's like a coping mechanism for them. But now substance would be secondary, but the primary issue is that they're grieving. So they don't even understand what's happening to them. But if there's a professional like a social worker involved, they're able to have those sessions with the individual where they paint a picture for them to say, actually, you're not using the substance because of you want to. This is what is your initial problem or your challenge.
Sure. Now, Debogo, can you let us know how the South African Depression and Anxiety Group can help us in this regard as families when we have our loved ones or we ourselves abusing substance? How can we get help from the South African Depression and Anxiety Group?
So how the South African Anxiety Depression Group can help is that we've got a 24-hour helpline, which is the Substance Abuse Helpline, which we partner with the Department of Social Development. So they're able to call the helpline, which is 24/7, 365 days, where we can navigate this situation together. Like I always emphasize, anyone can call in, a family member, you know, the actual user, where we can provide the necessary referrals to say that from this point, this is where we are moving into. So we are always available as the South African Anxiety Depression Group, as we've realized that people cannot do it alone. Like you just alluded, a family member has just said, can I speak to a social worker? So we are able to provide those referrals to say, okay, this is a social worker in this area where you are based. Communicate with them to start the process. So it's also highlighting the fact that when you see a social worker or a professional, like a psychologist, you need an appointment. But you need help now. How do you navigate that? Because now you are stuck. You don't even know which direction to take. So as the South African Anxiety Depression, we've got a 24-hour helpline. We also have got a WhatsApp where people can reach out to us, where we can navigate the situation together. Like it all boils down to say that we don't have to do this thing alone.
Sure. We don't have to do this thing alone. Can we get the numbers where we can call when it comes to substance abuse at the South African Depression and Anxiety Group?
So the number to call is 0800 12 13 14.
0800 12 13 14.
Yes, and we also got this website helpline for mental health. So all our information is available on our website, which is our WhatsApp, you know, our Facebook page, because we also do taking online webinars where we invite, you know, other groups like your Tough Love to join us, so we can educate the community. So we can get the information on our website, which is www.sadex.org.za.
Wow, thank you so much, Deborah, for helping us understand how to communicate with someone using substance and also to get help ourselves who are the ones who are abusing substance or using substance. And you spoke about empathizing with the person and emphasizing that recovery is possible and to help, that help is available. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
No, thank you so much, family, for having me.
We hope to have you again back soon where you can talk to us about another one. That was like really, really informative. Very, very great. Thank you so much, Deborah.
No, thank you so much.
And yes, that was Deborah Ramadiro from the South African Depression and Anxiety Group. Remember that you can call the South African Depression and Anxiety Group on 0800 12 13 14. He said it's 0800 12 13 14. For more information on mental health and how to find help in your area, you can go to www.masivue.org.za. And yes, my family program was supported by the grant of cooperative agreement number GH002393/3, funded by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The contents are solely the responsibility of the producers and do not necessarily represent us as Radio Pulpit or the official views of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention or the Department of Health and Human Sciences. We are crossing over to the 1 o'clock news bulletin with Sune Stoffberg, and we are coming back with Patricia Komani. We are going back to texts. If you remember very well, we started talking about personal texts, and we are still right there. And we don't want you to miss it as we are continuing together with her today. So we are just going to take these, taking us to the news bulletin at 1 with Sune Stoffberg.
Did you know you can listen to your favorite programs whenever you want? Check out our podcasts. Listen to your best love presenters anytime, anyplace. No need to miss out on your favorite programming. It's just a click away. Go to our website at radiopulpit.co.za and click on our podcast page for a variety of content at your fingertips. Yes, Radio Pulpit is still your daily companion.
Do you need prayer? WhatsApp your name and your prayer request to 082-657-2729 and our care center will gladly contact you to pray for you.
It's good for you as our listener to know about Radio Pulpit's activities. Or do you need advice in an area of your life? Then why don't you log on to www.radiopulpit.co.za. Here you can talk to us, listen to us via live audio streaming, and there is also other reading material for the soul. What are you waiting for? Visit the Radio Pulpit website right now. www.radiopulpit.co.za. Radio Pulpit, your daily companion.
You and 657 AM and life, a winning team on the road to eternity.